Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Zuvine for August 21st, 2011. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and with me again this week, and we were discussing how consistent the three of us have been recently. Catherine Smith, welcome.
Hello, welcome from Atlanta.
And Tim Shiflett, how you doing?
I'm doing well up here in the mountains. Good to talk to you tonight, sir.
Yes, and hopefully some interesting political discussion folks want to listen to. But I think we will, because this week we have two great guests, Jason Carter, state senator from Atlanta, Georgia, or Decatur, Georgia, I should say. He'll be on with us to tell us how the first week of redistricting in Georgia went and what to look for in the next week and maybe some of the motivations to these maps, which have really gotten national attention in political circles, will be with us. And in the second half hour, Hattiesburg Mayor Johnny Dupree will be with us this week to discuss his gubernatorial campaign, and if I'm not mistaken, that runoff election actually will take place this Tuesday, so it's just great timing to have Mayor Dupree on with us in the second half hour, so we're excited about that. But until Jason comes on, we're going to start discussing some topics for people, and the first one that caught my attention is in Louisiana, they do not have a gubernatorial candidate, and unfortunately, I don't think the Democratic Party can get this candidate for this year, but there is hope for the future. Eddie Edwards is 81 years old. He just got released from jail. He can't run unless he receives, I think it's a presidential pardon he has to get. Correct me if I'm wrong, because it was a federal case. I have a funny feeling that President Obama probably won't pardon him, but my goodness, if he did, wouldn't that just be more fun in one of the most colorful careers in 20th century politics. Tim, would you like to see another Eddie Edwards run?
Boy, I'll tell you something, David. Louisiana is an interesting state historically, for starters. And number two, it's really a sad thing. And the reason I say that is it just really shows the present state of the statewide Democratic Party in Louisiana when somebody, even in an offhand way, is talking about, you know, Edwin Edwards being a fair-haired golden boy for the future of the Democratic Party down there. They can't even find anybody to run for governor. It's amusing and it's sad at the same time.
Well, at 81, Tim, I don't think he's fair hair. But I will say this. Well, you know, about 2 years ago, we each told our favorite political slogans. And I think we all have losing candidates. But as far as winning candidates, one of the greatest campaign slogans might have been, vote for the crook, it's important, referring to Eddie Edwards. I don't think that was a self-chosen bumper sticker. Yeah. Catherine, what do you remember about that bumper sticker and the career of Eddie Edwards?
What like you said, very colorful. You know, I read a little bit about him today, and he has had a checkered and interesting political life, you might say. You know, he's won, and there was one race he won where there were like seven candidates running or something. Seven, maybe more, 13. You know, like Tim said, Louisiana is always colorful and always there's always some, you know, from so there's always something crazy going on there, and it is a big disappointment though that they have no one viable to run for governor this year. I mean, I just think it's sad. You know, it's sad. You know, as a Democrat, I find it sad, but also for the citizens of Louisiana to not have any choice but to elect, you know, I mean, they're not even, it's, I mean, if there's no one else running, there's not even a choice. And I that's always unfortunate, I think.
Catherine,
yeah,
you know,
have school teacher Tara, this raised like $4,000. So while she will be on the ballot, I mean, $4,000, I don't know that anyone will know you exist.
Right.
But she is running, so we'll give Tara Holland some credit.
But look, when I was a kid in the state of Georgia, there would be gubernatorial races, U.S. Senate races. No Republican would even be on the ballot. That is happening now in the South, you know, the other way. We are becoming one-party states, and they're Republican states.
Yeah, although you would think in, you know, 2011 that politics are more sophisticated and people expect a little more choice than they might have in 1950, 1960, if you will.
Well,
I mean,
sacrificial lambs are no more fashionable now than they were 40 years ago, David. You know, that.
You have a Roy Barnes or DeVos Porter there. They've got a lady with $4,000. I mean, I would dare say that if one of the three of us put our name up on the ballot, that we might know enough people to raise more than $4,000. Who knows? We might could put an extra zero behind that thing.
The other thing is the sacrificial lambs. There were times when, I mean, there are times when a sacrificial lamb is very helpful for the future. You know, it helps you figure out your districts. It helps you figure out where the Democrats are or where your party is. It, you know, gives a potential candidate some experience. But it's so expensive now. Like, you can't do it. Whereas, you know, 50
years
ago.
Yeah, I think you're right about it. Yeah, you're figuring out your baseline.
And it might 50 years ago you could do it wouldn't cost so much and it might help you in the future, but now it's just too expensive to try to do that.
And all those points are good points, but still, now go out and find that credible. I find that credible candidate that wants to, you know, essentially take a thrashing, and it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I will say this, in the case of Louisiana, if after this they don't know where their nadir is, they don't know where their baseline is, that will be a tough lesson to have. Now, Eddie Edwards, if he were to run again, I just don't think even a well-liked 81-year-old would have much of a chance. But I will say this in his favor. As Paul Newman said, playing Earl Long, two things you can't do in Louisiana politics is be caught with a dead girl or a live boy. And I don't think Fast Eddie's had either one of those transgressions, right, Tim?
No, he hasn't, but he has the word incarceration, you know, in his record. And that's not going to change. And he just can't run anymore, you know.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I mean, didn't he, I believe he went down with another Eddie DeBartolo, and I'm sure there's a lot of 49er fans that probably like to see him come back too, given the history. So, you know, I guess desperate measures call for desperate times. It's just so crazy that he wants to continue, and I guess he is the epitome of the old adage, there's only one cure for politics, and that's embalming fluid.
David,
right,
David, look, you said it yourself. Name me a credible statewide Louisiana Democrat not named Landru right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's not one. One would have thought that Charlie Malone could have run in the correct year and gotten somewhere. But, you know, that's just we've seen that test case that 2010 obviously wasn't that year. Now you get the correct year, he might do a little better, but it's pretty rough sledding right now. And if the Landrews hit the wrong year running statewide, they may even have trouble. They just seem to kind of get lucky and when they come up. 96, Mary Lindrick was first elected. I believe she hit in 2006. You know, she just hits good years, I guess, for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
If you will. So,
yeah.
Well, that was our first topic. Let's go ahead and move on to Alan West. We love to talk about Congressman West. And actually, he's been mentioned as a U.S. Senate candidate. I saw that, too. But he had some trouble. His brother has been hurt by the economy. He doesn't have a job. I certainly hope his brother gets a job. No ill will there. And so he was sent to the Congressional Black Caucus job fair. And apparently, Representative West didn't necessarily have the best intentions when he sent him. I guess he wanted to kind of mock the event or mock the leaders, including Maxine Waters. But then brother went and said, hey, this is a good thing, and, you know, let's be productive. And some of my brother's comments have been unproductive. Catherine, what do you make all this?
Well, I think that Mr. West, I think his name is Arlen West, is speaking for all of us when we say, okay, enough with the, you know, divisive politics. Let's, you know, get to work. Let's get, you know, let's get some people, get jobs for people. Let's, you know, try to get a handle on the economy. And I think that he is probably voicing what a lot of people feel. And, you know, good for him for going to the job fair. There were thousands of people at that job fair. There were. I saw on Good Morning America the following morning helicopter photos of lines and lines of people all the way around the facility. So, you know, people are looking for work, and this was a great opportunity that the Congressional Black Caucus brought to Atlanta. So why would you criticize that and sort of mock it when, you know, I don't know what Representative West has done to bring any jobs to help people find jobs. I don't know. Maybe he has. Maybe he's had some job fairs there. I don't know. But I do think that he is, you know, echoing what a lot of people, including myself, are feeling about the political arena right now. Like, okay, enough with the divisiveness. Let's just get to work.
Well, for the sake of Representative West, let's hope the old adage is true, that there's no such thing as bad news if you're in the news, because he's been making a lot of it, and I wouldn't call it good. Well, I believe we have a first guest on the line, and he's a returning guest, although this, I believe, is the first time as Senator Carter. Welcome, Senator Jason Carter.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? Thanks for having me again.
Oh, certainly so. Well, you've been down this past week in the redistricting, and I believe that the maps are partially pushed through with the state Senate and the state House. Just kind of give us a recap on some of the more intriguing lines, if you will. Obviously, you can't go over all 200-plus districts, but just give us the highlights.
Well, as I'm sure y'all's listeners know, the Senate, the Georgia Senate, generally passes the Senate map, and the House generally passes a House map. So I have been spending a lot of my time in the Senate looking at the Senate map, while Stacey Abrams and others in the House have been spending their time on the House map. The short story is that it's the same old story. I mean, the party in power is trying to entrench themselves even further by drawing partisan maps, and both the House and the Senate maps are designed to give the Republican Party a supermajority, or a two-thirds majority in each house of the General Assembly, so they can pass constitutional amendments with no help from the Democrats or no opposition from the Democrats. There have been several sort of interesting storylines with regard to the treatment of minorities and their interpretation of the Voting Rights Act and with a variety of other things, but I don't know how deep you want me to get into that. I've been living it, as you said, for several weeks.
Yeah, well, we'll probably get pretty deep as we keep asking questions. Catherine, go ahead with your first round of questions for Senator Carter.
Hey, Jason, thanks for being on. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
And I think you were on, since you've been Senator, because I think you were on to talk about the Hope Scholarship stuff back in during the session. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about, I haven't looked at the Senate maps as closely as I've looked at the House maps, but in the House maps, there's a lot of I mean, it looks to me, I mean, of course, I'm a woman, and I'm always looking for how I'm represented by women, and it looks like there's a lot of matchups between men and women, and women looking like they may lose their seats, just in the way the demographics of the various districts. Are there similar situations in the Senate? Are there matchups in the Senate that were going to be hurt by potentially losing women senators, Democratic women senators?
That's certainly a possibility. The big difference, I mean, in the House you're drawing 180 districts, so there's 180 decisions to be made, and it just sort of amplifies from a numerical standpoint whatever they're doing. In the Senate, since there's only 56, you know, you sort of don't get the same broad patterns. But in the Senate, there's only – so, for example, there's multiple pairings of incumbents in the House, including, as you mentioned, a lot of Democrats paired against each other. In the Senate, there's really only one pairing. But it does involve one of the best and most hardworking, wonderful female senators in the Senate, Freddie Pyle Sims from Albany, as well as George Hooks, who represents my grandfather's old district from America. So there is a pairing like that in the Senate, but it's only one. Otherwise, I think, there's only one Republican woman in the Senate. All of the other women are Democrats, and they will all be probably just fine, or at least in districts similar to the ones they're in now.
And what about your district? You're fine, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could have in the Senate, if they had been really vindictive politically and wanted to go after a lot of people, they could have paired a lot more of us. And so they left me in a district without an incumbent other than me. So I'm not paired, and my district looks like it does today. So, I'm personally okay. But that's not the point of the process, in my view. I mean, you know,
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And I have to give you guys amazing credit for being able to unify behind us. I was so happy when I read all about the unity on Thursday. It was really a relief, and it actually made me say to some of my friends that if the, you know, our legislators can do this, then we can put away some of our little petty arguments that we've had over the years with other activists and really try to work together, all of us. I mean, it's really important, I think, as we go forward and try to, you know, repair this. But I'm going to turn it over to Tim now.
Thank you for that. And let me just mention one thing
okay.
on that topic. We have a brand new leader in the Senate, Steve Hinton, and Stacey Abrams is in her first year as a leader in the House caucus. So the Democrats in both chambers are led essentially by freshman leaders, and both those two people did an incredible job. And, you know, one of the things, as you mentioned, about Democrats in general is we're not homogenous. I mean, there's all kinds of different people who call themselves Democrats. And so to keep together in that context, when there are a lot of personal issues involved for the individuals, really does speak a great deal to the leadership in our party at the legislature and the character of the folks down there. So thank you for noticing.
Oh, no, everybody noticed. Everybody noticed. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
Okay, good evening, Senator. And the first thing I noticed was some creative line drawing in Fulton County. If I'm looking correctly, the Republicans maybe could walk out of there with a 7-3 split. Could this possibly be about Milton County?
I'll say this. The majority leader in the Senate is Chip Rogers from Canton, Cherokee County, and his district now comes into Fulton. The chairperson of the reapportionment committee, Mitch Seebaugh, from Coweta County, and his district now comes into Fulton. And when we got to the Capitol the other day, I don't know whose car it was, but there was a car. It's parked in the Chip Rogers' parking space with Cherokee County plates that had a big bumper sticker that said Milton County Now.
Oh,
and like
God.
I said, I don't know whose car it was, but it had Cherokee County plates and it was parked in the majority leader's spot.
Oh, so it really is about Milton County probably then, isn't it?
I think so. I think one thing to note, though, is, you know, those local, they can pass Milton County without the Fulton delegation. I mean, and mm-hmm. so, you know, because they've, as we've seen in DeKalb County, they have the ability to go around the local delegations when they want to. I think it's partly about Milton County and partly about just not being able to tolerate a single area in which Democrats have control. And that Fulton delegation is one of those areas, as it should be, because it represents that county, which is overwhelmingly Democratic, and they just can't tolerate that. So they're trying to squeeze even the last little bit of Democratic control out of the legislature.
Now, David and I, of course, are from up here in Northwest Georgia, and we're rather interested up this way, obviously, in what's going on down here in my neighbor county of Floyd. Barry Loudermilk was moved south into a pretty much Bartow County-dominated district, essentially freeing up the 52nd district and making it an open seat. Is there any idea why this was done?
I know that Senator Loudermilk mentioned to me it's going to be a big change for him. He gets 120,000 new constituents. But he also mentioned that Bartow Forsyth district, you know, is a Tea Party bastion, and he was looking forward to representing it. I mean, as you know, he is an incredibly conservative, maybe the most conservative member of the Senate. But that Floyd County district, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, you may recall that there was a senator who called Floyd County home very recently, and I don't know what his plans are, but.
Okay, then. Well, I'm going to pass it over to David on that one. David?
Well, I wish you meant that Richard Marable could come back and represent the Floyd County District, but unless we have a real tide shift in the electorate, I don't know how doable that'll be, but that would be the best thing for the state legislature in Floyd County. But let's get on to some other questions. And the first one that popped in my mind is obviously – while I liked it politically, the maps that were drawn in 2000 were, you know, they did split up communities of interest. I would have to concede that point. But then obviously these lines have their own very harsh political slant, just, you know, trying to completely make the districts very segregated, making politics all about who you are, not what you believe necessarily. With the two together, bring about maybe a lot of just average swing voter Georgians to say, hey, maybe we should do like Iowa and have judicial nonpartisan maps drawn where it's not all about what's best for one party or the other.
You know, I hope so. I mean, let me say one thing. The maps that were drawn in 2001 were outrageous. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. We've got to concede that point and get over it. I mean, you know, the answer, however, is not the Republican answer, which is we'll try to do the same thing but just make it look prettier. I mean, the answer is, as you just described, an independent process that people can have faith in. I mean, I wrote an op-ed in the AJC last Friday about exactly that point. Senator Hardy Davis and I this year sponsored legislation that would have created an independent redistricting commission. And our legislation was identical to legislation that – essentially identical to legislation that came through when Sonny Perdue was the governor as a result of Sonny Perdue's Blue Ribbon Commission on redistricting. And so the Republicans wanted it. You know, Sonny Perdue pushed it. We agreed with it and pushed it, and it went nowhere. And the reason it went nowhere is because the people in power like power and don't want to give it up. And it was true when the Democrats were in control, and it's true when the Republicans are in control. And I agree
Amen.
With you wholeheartedly that we need an independent system that people can have faith in.
Another question I have is back in 1990, during that round of redistricting, you know, African-American voters were used by Republicans, and actually it was more of a coalition to make sure there were more majority-minority districts. And it was good for Republicans because then it made the white Democratic districts more likely to be, you know, swingable and flip, and some of them did over time for whatever reasons. And so there was a case where black Democrats white Republicans got together in agreement. Now, this time, the Republicans are using that same strategy, maybe without the support of black Democrats. But do you think it's almost like if in 1990 the districts would have been more like white Democrats wanted and not created as many majority-minority districts, that somehow it couldn't have been used in this way 20 years later?
I think you've hit on probably, from a long-term standpoint, the most interesting aspect of this particular reapportionment in Georgia. This is the very first time that a legislative black caucus has been entirely unified, unanimously voting against two plans that increased the number of majority-minority districts. And the reason is that in the past, you know, as you mentioned, in 2000 and in 1990, Democrats were attempting to disperse African-American voters in multiple districts to help Democratic candidates. And it needed at that time to increase the number of majority-minority districts in order to build the strength of the minority community. But the script has flipped in many ways, and we now are in a position, as evidenced by the unity that Catherine mentioned, it is no longer creating majority-minority districts, maximizing the number of majority-minority districts, has stopped being about strengthening that community and has started to be about isolating that community from its coalition partners. Carolyn Hughley, who's the whip in the House and African-American representative from Columbus, put it best. She said, if we pass these maps, we will have more black representatives than we've ever had, and they will have less power. And that's why it has become about isolation and not about building strength.
Yes, and so it becomes more important if you want power, which party you're in, not the color of your skin. And I guess in some ways that's a post-racial argument, which, you know, simple may say is healthy. Well, Jason, it's my understanding that you're going to be involved in a big event this week, but I think Catherine knows a lot about that too, so I'm going to let her phrase that question to you. Catherine?
Are we talking about the Murphy Awards? We're talking about the Murphy Awards?
We are.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell us about the Murphy Awards, Jason.
Well,
Park Tavern, right?
Say again?
Park Tavern? Wednesday night or Thursday night?
Yeah, Park Tavern on Wednesday night, and I'm very honored to be given an award by the Young Democrats of Georgia for my work on the Hope Scholarship, and I'll look forward to seeing everybody there.
Yeah, full and calm.
Is it at 7? 7 to 8:30? Is that right?
Yeah, 7 o'clock at Park Tavern.
Yeah. And unusually this year, well, of course, the Young Democrats always welcome donations. There is no actual ticket price. It's only donations. So anyone who's listening out there, if you'd like to come to the Murphy Awards, you can come for free. Of course, the Young Democrats always need your support.
And before I drop off, I will promise that anybody who comes for free will find that my speech is worth the price of admission. I'll see y'all later.
Thank you so much.
Navar. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Bye, guys.
Yes. Well, it was good to have Senator Carter on, and hopefully we'll have him again. And I do apologize. Catherine, you are correct. We had him on when he was running, I believe, unopposed in the special election. We did have him on again to talk about the Hope Scholarship. You're 100% correct. So that was my oversight. So thanks for correcting that. So he's been a three-time guest, and I have a funny feeling he may make a fourth or fifth appearance at some point in the future. Well,
he loves us.
He loves coming on. Well, who does?
Oh.
It's so much fun. Who doesn't? I remember he was trying to. Yeah, he was trying to help us get other guests. He said, "Hey, it's a great opportunity. It's easy," and that's the truth. Well, let's go ahead and before we get Mayor Dupree on with us, which will happen momentarily, we'll talk about a Georgia poll involving Rick Perry. By the way, Herman Cain has his own blog talk radio show. It seems like some weeks Rick Perry has his own blog talk radio show. It's called The Kudzu Vine because we keep discussing the guy because he makes news for whatever reason. I guess he's a force of nature in politics right now. But they had a Georgia poll that came out in Insider Advantage, showed him leading like less than a week after joining the race. Tim, how do you account for such a rapid rise for a guy that I bet a lot of people couldn't even point to achievements of the guy?
Yeah, but the thing is his name has been out there, you know. It's not that he's caught the whole world by surprise and he's a flash in a pan, this kind of thing. He actually is a candidate that a lot of Republicans have been pining for. So I am not surprised at all that Herman Cain was overtaken, okay, in Georgia. And you know, Governor Romney is not going to be that popular here. He's a Mormon, and he was governor of Massachusetts. Perry is a fellow Southerner, and he's talking the kind of, shall we say, raw meat instead of red meat speeches that will really appeal to Georgia Republicans, I think, or the average Georgia Republican voter.
Tim, I'm offended. I'm a Georgian lifelong, and if you gave me the choice between Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney, and Donnie Marie Osmond, I'd take either one of the Osmonds every time. How about you, Catherine?
Oh, geez.
Okay, so Catherine,
I would abstain. I couldn't decide. I don't know. Those Osmonds, they scare me.
Okay, let's not malign the Osmonds anymore. The guy... I do get the sense that one thing that's going to help this guy is for the average Republican, the conservative Tea Party voter, they're going to look at the states that these three candidates come from. They're going to go, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
That's not a Republican area.
Right.
Minnesota, nah, that's Walter Mondale country. And they're going to say, oh,
right.
Texas, oh, that's good, Texas. And that's just basically what they're voting on. But then if you look at this guy, remember when we had all the different people on from the Burn Orange Report, we've had multiple guests from Texas. And they would all say, you know, if it was a few years down the road, it wasn't Texas, and it was a different year than 2010, Rick Perry might not have won re-election. He just happened to hit the right year, and he was in, of course, the right state, and it wasn't two cycles down the road. Because Texans were kind of sick of the guy. And they were staying on this, if you will.
But now we're talking a different animal, a national race. And if I were advising Governor Perry, I would immediately tell him, okay, quit trying to out-crazy Michelle Bachmann, because, number one, nobody can, you know. And number two, you're the governor of a large state with a record. Why aren't you touting that record, you know, of job creation and things like that? That's what people want to hear about. They don't want to hear that the chairman of the Fed is committing treason or that the president doesn't love America. Those are Michelle Bachmann statements or Rush Limbaugh statements. If you want to be the nominee of the party, you know, step up. Okay.
Yeah,
you know, if they look too very closely at that job creation, it's kind of a myth. I mean, they're very low-paying jobs. They're not a lot of them are permanent jobs.
But
so while he, you know, can talk a little bit about that, if you delve too deep, it doesn't look so good.
That's true, Catherine. But it really would be better for him to talk about his record as governor than to talk about whether Ben Bernanke is committing treason. Because I just think people that are out of work and stuff don't want to listen to that nonsense right now. Do you?
Oh, yeah,
well,
I think the job creation argument will work in the primary, definitely. I mean, compared to Romney's record, he'll be able to use that in the primary. Now, it'll be looked at much more thoroughly in the general. I'm sure we can look in. Probably there was pretty decent job growth under Bush as governor, and then, of course, that all went south when he took it national, and I'm sure that little connection won't be hard to make for the Obama campaign. Now, talking about the Bernanke thing, that's a good angle because – that's George Bush's man, if you will, and I think George Bush, that ruffled some feathers in his camp. Isn't that what you've heard, Catherine?
Yes. Well, there's a lot of feathers ruffled in the Bush camp, though.
about Perry.
Yeah, about Perry.
But then,
Perry and Bush are not buddies.
Yeah, and the thing is if he kind of leaves Bush alone, I think we all, the consensus was Bush won't say anything negative. But if he keeps poking the bear, if you will, and, you know, talks about his guy installed and keeps on and does little things like that, there might be some pushback. And that would be, once again, a very interesting angle if that comes to fruition. And then go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, get this. I got a friend up in Franklin, Tennessee, Rock Rib Republican, in the middle of the most Republican county in the state of Tennessee, and that's all he votes for is Republicans. When Perry gets in, he tells me, okay, here's the guy I've been waiting for, and now tell me what you know about him, because he knows that I'm into politics in a big way. And you know what really bothered him about Perry that I told him more than anything? Was the fact that he used to be a Democrat. That ate him alive. He did not know that. And I'm wondering if a lot of the hardcore conservatives even know that. What do y'all think?
Well, I think a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, I don't think it'll help him. And there's not a lot of purity in that party, because if you take Romney's record in Massachusetts, that ain't going to be a plus.
But at least
like Huntsman,
he's been a Republican this whole life.
Yeah, he has. But he's been a pro-choice Republican. He's been a pro-providing some state health care Republican. Different things like that. I mean, so none of them are really pure except for maybe a Bachman. So it will be interesting to see how that all plays. Tim, you brought it up, that those comments he made about, you know, the people in the military, they want a commander-in-chief that worn the uniform. Was that really an issue on anybody's mind? And didn't that just bring up, like, if President Obama said, oh, well, thanks for getting the attention off the jobs picture, and now we can talk about how I helped kill Osama bin Laden. So I really didn't think that was a good angle to bring back to. Tim?
Well, I'm gonna say it again. The one of those Republicans that really scares me,
that could really go all the way and win this thing if he could somehow get the nomination, would be Mitt Romney. He would appeal to moderate voters in ways that none of the other candidates presently in the race could.
I agree with you, and I think that there's a lot of people that. A lot of, you know, more conservative Republicans that would hold their nose and vote for him because he's not President Obama.
Right. Hey, there you go.
Well, and I'll say this. I still think John Huntsman's the best candidate for the general election, but I think I probably have a better chance putting a snow cone in my car tomorrow morning and expecting it to still be frozen tomorrow afternoon than John Huntsman does. And win in the primary. That's the problem. But he's even a better candidate than Romney, because he's more like what he stood for 5 years ago is more what he stands for today, whereas Romney's this chameleon that's all over the place. There's just something that's not core about him. And plus, you know, President Obama can attack Romney pretty well. He can say, look, I just don't agree with the guy. I mean, how can he savage somebody that he actually put in his administration? Oh, he's wrong for America, but yet I let him be ambassador to the largest nation in the world.
Yeah.
You know, that's a harder attack to make.
The fact of the matter is there's three Republicans running that can get the nomination, and that's Romney, Perry, and Bachman, and none of the rest of the field could possibly get it. If I'm Chris Christie and I'm looking at the lay of the land, somebody like that, I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe I bowed out too quickly. So there may be another big name or two jump in.
Possibly, but it seems like the money, the attention, the fact that you didn't come in whatever place in the Iowa or the Ames straw poll will be a problem. Well, continuing to talk about some of these presidential candidates and races, there was a poll in Florida that came out that showed Romney ahead. Florida, the largest state in the South, even though it doesn't necessarily have a pure Southern characteristic, but it is one of the earlier states on the Republican side. And, you know, Rudy Giuliani actually tried to bank his strategy on Florida. How big
yeah,
is the lead in this poll in Florida, Catherine?
I was surprised to see that. It was like neck and neck with President Obama. Was it like 49, 48, 50
this
or something?
This was the primary. Yeah, well,
primary.
I think we predicted for a long time the general in Florida is going to be nip and tuck the way
yeah.
it pretty much always
but
is.
I was
but I'm talking
that,
about the primary.
Yeah, I was surprised that Romney took the lead there. I kind of expected Perry to. I don't know why. I just am. Just he seems to be, you know, steamrolling through the South. But like you said, you
yeah.
know, Florida's a little bit different.
Yeah,
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, that kind of is a little bit of a fallback because if you look at Iowa, probably gets won by either Bachman or Perry. Then New Hampshire goes to Romney. Then South Carolina probably goes again either to Perry or Bachman. I'd probably give Bachman the edge in Iowa, Perry the edge in South Carolina. Then if the fourth state is Florida, which I believe on the Republican calendar it is, then that gives Romney the second win and the biggest state of the four. So it's a pretty big deal if it holds, although we'll probably have 25 polls before then, Tim, right?
Yeah, true, but Romney does have a pretty good double-digit lead there. And the second-place person is sitting at only 16%. So Romney's in pretty good shape there. And I've got a feeling if Romney's going to win the Republican nomination, he's going to win it by winning those big states, Florida, California, New York, Michigan, Ohio, you know, and run up some big delegate counts everywhere but Texas.
Yeah, and obviously Michigan's a good state for him with his past.
Oh, yeah.
If you will, in some of those western states that are near Utah, they're friendly. But it's going to be interesting to see, but it's going to be more of, I guess, an inertia move where you start to win more and more states. And we've moved off Perry, but we kind of need to move back since we have a little more time to discuss this than I originally anticipated. There was on that poll thread talking about the poll of Impeach Pundit, there was actually this long, lengthy discussion about Rick Perry investing in Movie Gallery. And Movie Gallery, I guess, to the average person, is just like the B-level Blockbuster, if you will. A lot of them have closed up now, but they were usually served a little smaller communities than Blockbuster and had a lot of just regular movie titles. But apparently they were also the number one provider of pornography films. There was one in our Merchie, Tim. I don't know if you ever stopped, but I didn't know there was a back room if there was. But apparently at some of these there were back rooms. That's where they brought pornography into communities. It was kind of a back doorway, if you will, to get it in. And a lot of social conservatives were pretty angry about this. And obviously social conservatives are a huge influence in the Republican Party. Is this much to do about nothing, or could this actually be something that hurts them, in particularly a state like Iowa?
No, I don't think there's going to be much to this. I mean, look, a couple of weeks ago we was talking something similar about the governor here and how scandalous that was, and it's been bumped right off the pages of the newspapers by redistricting. So this thing I don't think will have any legs. I think most people just say, well, that's 16 years ago, and he probably didn't have a clue that he was investing in something like this. He just looked at it as an investment. He would have been the lieutenant governor of Texas at the time. And, you know, I don't think it'll have any legs at all.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I was going to ask your take. I just sometimes when people invest in stuff, it's hard to, you know, unless they, you know, really get to spend a lot of time with it. Not that it's always an excuse, but you don't know exactly every little detail about the company when you're busy being lieutenant governor. And honestly, I mean, I think the average person thinks Movie Gallery is just a video rental place. Because I have a feeling a lot of them didn't even have the secret back room, if you will. and so people don't associate it with that. I mean, if it was some other place that was all adult movies and they had to fight zoning laws, if you will, to get it, and it got real nasty and it was well known and he invested in this, it might be a little more salacious, might have a little more legs. But I will tell you, some of these social conservatives, they don't necessarily have to have a good reason to oppose things. Wouldn't you agree with that, Catherine?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think unless it, like you said, I absolutely agree. Unless it's like, you know, some giant porn shop or, you know, I mean, I don't think people, I've never been to a movie gallery, but I've been to movie rental places where they have adult movies, and they have them, you know, secluded, and it's only 18, you know. I mean, I think, I mean, even the most conservative of people have gotten somewhat used to that, I think, right? I mean, it's 2011.
Well, Michelle Bachman hadn't. I'm sure she's still flipping that. Because remember, didn't she say something about pornography?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, first of all, David, Michelle's problem is that a lot of people hadn't gotten used to her yet. And secondly, let's just have a choice here. If I'm a big social conservative and somebody tells me that Rick Perry, you know, invested in movie gallery and then they had a thriving little porn industry and all that, and in the same sentence they tell me, you know, he used to be a Democrat, which one of those statements is going to make my radar rise, huh?
But then, of course, a lot of these good Republicans are going to say, yeah, he used to invest in porn and he used to be a Democrat. Then he became a Republican and he changed his ways.
I would be more angry that he was a party switcher. I mean,
me too.
Yeah, but you know how it is. They like to forgive anything when you put the R behind your name, if you will. I've noticed that.
Some of the true believers don't now.
Yeah, but some they just overlook, you know, a lot of stuff when you got that R. Well, let's continue to talk about some more topics. And one, actually, I didn't plan on discussing, but it's a little fun topic, and we got extra time. With our guest situation, and that would be Michelle Bachman said, hey, everybody, why don't we just wish Elvis a happy birthday? If he were alive today, he'd turn, and I forgot how old Elvis would have turned. But there was one little problem, and by the way, we know she's from Minnesota, but Elvis was from Memphis and Tupelo, Mississippi, so he's Southern, so it's in our wheelhouse. That it wasn't Elvis's birthday. It was the day that Elvis died. Catherine, was it a little tacky to celebrate somebody's death day as their birthday?
Oh, yeah, that's bad. I mean, that's bad. I mean, it's fine to say, you know, we you know, are in mourn with all Elvis fans on the day of his death. That's fine. You know, you can recognize the day of his death. I think we all do that. For certain things, but to mistake the day of his death for his birthday is a huge faux pas, huge. Almost as bad as thinking that you're in the hometown of, what was it?
She was in Concord, New Hampshire. That's what you're talking about, ain't it, Catherine?
Well, no, remember when she said she was in her hometown?
Yeah, She thought she was in John Wayne's hometown. It was John Wayne Gacy, right?
Right. Yeah, it's the same kind of stupid mistake. You know, the thing is, the thing that this brings up that is, as much as it makes her look like an idiot, it also makes her staff look like idiots, which in turn questions, you know, makes us question her management and, you know, hiring choices. Because someone should have caught both of those things. Someone should have said, wait, it's not Elvis's birthday. You know, whoever's, you know, handling her isn't doing a very good job.
Yeah, although she may be hard to handle, if you will.
Further evidence that she probably wouldn't be a very good president.
Yeah, I think that's true there. Although, I will say this. I probably would have forgiven this mistake if she would have then led the crowd in maybe a rendition of Poor Little Baby Child in the Ghetto, one of Elvis's classics, if you will, that I guess had a social commentary. That would have been fun for the crowd.
I mean,
Tim, you going to jump in there?
Yeah, I mean, this woman, though, has a history of just saying bizarre things. Like, you know, if you get rid of the minimum wage, it would create jobs. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is the biggest jobs killer in the United States. The movie The Lion King promotes the gay lifestyle. Now try that one. Take that one out for a spin. She says off the wall thing. She is like Palin on steroids.
What did she say promotes the gay lifestyle?
But before we get the caller in, Tim, you're right. If you got rid of the minimum wage, you create jobs. Instead of hiring one person for $7 an hour, you could hire three for like $2 an hour. I mean,
oh yeah, that would help.
Yeah, you know, you might live in a
yeah.
Yeah. Come on, Tim. Hey, we got a call from the 706 area code. Welcome, caller.
Hey, this is Lewis Elrod with the Young Democrats. How's everybody doing?
Hey, Lewis. Thanks for calling in. We had Jason Carter, who you'll be honoring on the Murphy Awards. You got that event coming up. Tell us about it.
Yes, we do. Just really quick about myself, I'm the president of the Young Democrats of Georgia, and I'm in Dunwoody right now, where apparently it's storming like crazy, so you might hear that in the background. But we have an event coming up this Wednesday. It's our annual Murphy Awards reception. We do this every year to honor outstanding legislators in the General Assembly. This year, we will be honoring Senator Jason Carter and also Representative Stephanie Stuckey Benfield. The event's going to be at 5:30 this Wednesday, August 24th, at the Park Tavern in Atlanta, by Piedmont Park on 10th Street. The parking for people who show up there, I know Park Tavern is now started charging for parking, but if you go to one of our events, you get a parking voucher, and it's free. So then using that as a selling point. We will also be having both the Senate and House minority leaders speaking to introduce our honorees. So Leader Steve Henson will be introducing Senator Carter, and Leader Abrams from the House will be introducing Stephanie Stuckey Benfield, and we have asked them both to also speak about the redistricting battle going on in the General Assembly right now during special session. So it should be a good event, we hope that if anybody's near Park Tavern that night, we hope that they'll show up at 5:30.
Yes, well, Lewis, we hope obviously a big crowd comes for you. But we did hear that you made a change, that you're going to have admission not be a certain price, but if we'll want to give a donation, they can. What prompted that move?
This year we decided to do voluntary donations mostly because we have several other events that we are fundraising around, and we also thought this is the first Murphy Awards we're going to have during special session, and we thought that instead of bugging the legislators for an admission price or anything like that, we hope that this would be a way to give the legislators a bit of a break. It's a time for them to all get together and just hang out, not have to worry about everything that's going on during the day, just to be hosted by the Young Democrats this time. And so we just wanted it to be as open as possible, and hope that'll help drive turnout as well.
Well, Lewis, we appreciate you calling in, and we want to thank you and hope that everybody comes to the Murphy Awards and glad we could promote it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lewis.
Let me know.
See you Wednesday.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye.
Yes. Well, Catherine, the reason I didn't throw to y'all is I believe we have our next guest on the line, Mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Welcome, Mayor Dupree.
Well, welcome. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Yes, we know how busy you are because the special election, the runoff is going to be up any time, but I'm glad you can make it on the Cousin Vine, and we'll get right into the questions. For people that are not familiar with you, tell us about your background.
Okay, I have to apologize to you. We are traveling, and so we didn't get on, I guess, when you should have because it couldn't get a good connection, so I hope I don't lose you, but I served for 5 years on the Hattiesburg School Board, and then I served as an elected official, a county official, for 10 years before being elected to mayor of Hattiesburg for 10 years. The last 10 years, I'm still serving as mayor. Prior to that, I had my own real estate company, still active in real active license. And then prior to that, I served in a major retail corporation. I'm married, have been married for 38 years, have two daughters who are both in the teaching profession.
Well, great. Just a few weeks ago, we had Robert Hooks come on the show, and he kind of told us, in some ways, I guess you might say, the Hattiesburg miracle, how times have been really rough fiscally for cities across the nation, but y'all had really weathered that storm better than most any city of your size in the South. Tell us how you're able to do that.
Well, I don't know if it's a miracle, but I think, well, I know for a fact it had to do with the personnel and the personalities in Hattiesburg. We all worked together collectively, put our heads together, pulling in the same direction, comprehensive plan, knowing where we wanted to go, and people working together. That started about 10 years ago when we pulled all the elected officials together and decided that we needed to represent or represent the people who elected us. And I think that helped us through Katrina, which helped us get through that faster than most cities were able to some normalcy, and with a plan to move forward. And then even the downturn in the economy, while still creating jobs, over 7,000 jobs in the 10 years and 1,000 jobs this year over the next 4 or 5 years. It was that comprehensive plan and people mindset working together that made that happen.
Well, that's great. I have on with me two co-hosts, so I'm going to pass it along to them for some questions, and I may have one or two more at the end, and we can even go over that hour if we need to get this whole thing in on the podcast, so don't worry. Tim, questions for Mayor Dupree.
Yes, sir. Mayor, in the issue section of your website, the very first issue listed is education. Is that the most important issue facing the voters in Mississippi, and if so, why?
Well, I think, you know, the voters would probably tell you that two issues, jobs and education. I tend to link the two together because I don't think you can do one without the other. You know, you have a great tax structure in Mississippi, which invites, I think, companies to come. We have a great work ethic with the people who work here, who live here. So I think that entices people to come to Mississippi as well. But you have also that negative, and that negative is the education that people feel that we don't have don't educate our kids properly to the level that they should be educated to. And you know, so it starts off with early childhood development, and it works all the way through to the high school, where we need to start looking at vocational and gifted programs, and all the way through to the college level, where we need to stabilize tuition so that everybody that who wants to go to college can have it, can go. So you know, most of the people who do work for me are entrepreneurs. They went to school with me, and they started their own businesses. We also have to look at big businesses and make sure that they're doing their fair share of paying their fair share of taxes so that we can do the same thing with small businesses. So education and job creation all work together. I don't think you can have one without the other. You have to work at both of them at the same time.
Okay, and my other question is, you know, David was talking to you about the Hattiesburg miracle. Has being a mayor helped to prepare you to be a state's governor?
Well, I think my life experiences has prepared me. You know, I started work when I was 8 years old. I moved from there to various jobs until through high school, working at the major corporation and running third in line at Sears Roebuck, to running my own business, to being president of the school board, basically setting policy for a school system, to having a leadership role on the Board of Supervisors, vice president, to being mayor. I mean, each level has, I think, helped develop me for greater things, larger opportunities in the public service sphere. And so certainly being a mayor, I think, has prepared me, because one of the things that happens when you're the mayor is when federal government or the state, they decide to do to send down unfunded mandates, or they decide to change the way they're doing things by raising taxes or cutting services. The people on the local level, whether that's on the school system or in the county government or city government, those people who are on that level, the ground level, have to figure out how they're going to make ends meet. And that's what we've done. We figured out how to make ends meet. We balanced our budget. We've done those things that you have to do to make sure that the services that we're supposed to bring, that we were done, that we've been able to provide those services. And so you have to do the same thing on the state level. So it's the same process, just on a larger playing field.
Thank you for that excellent answer, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to turn it over to Catherine now. Catherine?
Hello, thank you so much for being on with us. We really appreciate, it's in the midst of all this campaigning, that you've taken a few minutes to talk with us.
Yes.
Tell me how it's going on the road. You said you were on the road today. How are things going with the campaign, and what are, I mean, obviously people are talking about jobs and education, and what are people telling you out there? Are they frustrated? Are they optimistic? How are things on the ground?
Well, I think people are optimistic. You know, this weekend we've gone, I think, probably to 6 or 7 counties in northwest Mississippi. We've met with other elected officials in that process. We've met with probably 7 or 8 pastors through that process. We've met with voting leagues through this process. We've met people at Walmart. You know, we've passed our leases. We've met people where they are. That's what people want. I think they're optimistic that there's something different. That difference is a person who has had all that diversity of employment as far as public services are concerned, that we understand schools, the basic understanding, and county government and city government, and understand that you can't solve your problems without everybody sitting around the table doing that. Those who have a vested interest in whatever problem you have, you can solve them if you sit around the table, if you give them a seat at the table. And that's the way you have to govern now. You can't do it in isolation. You can't do it unilaterally. People have to have buy-in. And the only way you have buy-in is you have to put them around the table. So the way we govern is to make sure that we're going to hear what people have to say and discuss and try to come to some consensus before we make a decision. People get buy-in, you can solve your problems. And that's what people are believing in. And again, I don't think it's a Hattiesburg miracle. I think it's just the ability of the mindset of the people you're working with, that they all want to pull in the same direction, because we all want the same thing. The bottom line is, if you're a golfer, we've been bogeying or playing par ball. You know, and y'all golf, you know what I mean. You know, we got to have some birdies and eagles and some double eagles and some whatever. And it's time to start that. And I think that we can start that ball rolling down the hill, starting to play some positive ball. And I think that gives people encouragement. And that's what we need to do, start tackling some of these major issues that we have, and give the people some prospect of having a better life.
Well, it's so refreshing to hear someone talking this way about working to how important it is for us all to work together. Of course, we all believe that, but it sometimes seems we're unable to do it. So thank you so much for your hard work, and I'm going to turn this back to David now.
Okay, Mayor Dupree, you start talking sports, and of course it's August in the southern part of Mississippi. Now you're the mayor of where Brett Favre went to college. Is he going to play this year in the NFL or not?
He's probably going to play ball somewhere this year.
Any guesses on where? I've heard Philadelphia, Miami, or somewhere else.
Well, it may be high school ball somewhere, throwing the ball and being the quarterback coach or something. I don't know. I'm sure.
Oh, I thought you were fixing to make this a story.
Oh no. I think Brett loves football. I think football loves Brett. So I'm sure that Brett is not out of football by any stretch of the imagination. We just don't know what level he's going to participate in, but I guarantee he's probably going to participate in football at some level. You know, he's done a great job with the youth around this area. And if he doesn't play for Pitt, I know he'll stay involved in their lives and with football.
Yes. Well, now I have a little more serious political question, and the final question we'll ask. If someone's heard you or they know about your campaign and they want to get involved, help you some way in these last few days before the runoff and then looking forward to the general, how would they do that?
Well, I can give you a number and a website. The website is johnnydupree.com. It's real simple, johnnydupree.com. The number is the deputy campaign manager, Tyrone Hendricks, and his number is 601-622-9975. That's 601-622-9975.
Well, Mayor Dupree, thanks again for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and best of luck here coming up in this election.
Well, I appreciate you all taking the time to put us on here, and God bless you all, and I hope that Tuesday night will be a successful time for all of us and a new start for Mississippi.
We'll be watching it. We'll discuss it next week on the Kudzu Vine.
All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Yes, well, what a great show. We ended up having three guests. We gave you a little overtime, but I think it was definitely worth it. And so, and by the way, my basketball people are calling in. They're probably wondering where I'm at, but that's okay. I'll tell them I may have had the next governor of Mississippi on the line with us, and we had to finish that thing up right. But great show, and we'll be back next week on the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, guys.
Evening.